Hello and welcome to episode 117 of the Tech Reformation, where the world of technology meets the worldview of Christianity. I'm Ben.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Derek.
This week we're talking about 2018's 10 breakthrough technologies from the MIT Technology Review.
So grab your USBs and ESVs and let's get started.
Actually, you probably won't need your ESV for this one because we probably won't be touching a whole lot of Bible, but that's okay. It would be nice if we did. I'd be keen. I'm just not sure we'll get there, but we'll see how we go.
We'll see how this goes. So this is basically just a list of that Craig, you posted to the Slack, and
we don't do many of these sort of countdown things, but I came across this one and thought, you know what, we're still kind of close to the start of 2018, and this one might be interesting just to kind of run through briefly each one of these and have a quick chat about it and what we think. Maybe any concerns we have or anything that we think from this list that sort of jumps out to us as an actual real good breakthrough that might be really useful. The first one is 3D metal printing. So 3D printing has been around for quite a while now. From what I understand, it's mainly been plastic and it's been kind of slow and time consuming to set up. And so they're saying printing on anything else has been really, really slow. Printing on plastic is getting more efficient, but obviously it's pretty limited in application when it can only be made of one material. So they're saying that it's becoming cheap and easy enough to that 3D metal printing is a potentially practical way of manufacturing parts for metal objects. Cars are the example they use in the article. So if widely adopted, this could change the way we mass produce many products. So I don't have a problem with this one. This one sounds pretty useful actually. And I think in terms of, production lines and stuff like that would just be, I would imagine that would be super time saver. I guess I'd be interested to know whether it does anything to like structural integrity and stuff. Like, can you build something that's as strong as something that can be, that's built manually when you're building it on like a 3D printing basis? I don't know, but they're talking about, it sounds like they're talking about multi-part elements. So
yeah, the spec sheet on that would be pretty interesting to see. Man, 3D printing, I would have not expected 3D printing to get as far as it has. It just, when it first came out, it's like, I just don't see this as a, like, practical, because I mean, printing on paper makes sense because paper is limited in how you use it. The 3D printing, like, if you can only build so big a thing before, like, the mechanism to build the thing is as expensive as the actual thing you're building. I don't know. But, I mean, then you got people 3D printing houses in Russia and, like, crazy things. So, like, I guess it's a thing. And the ability to actually print metal, well, I mean, that's cool. That's cool.
We've recently had 3D printed objects invading my office. We have like 3D printed coasters and 3D printed business card holders and all kinds of practical 3D printed things. None of them are metal though. They're all plastic.
I would imagine if you're 3D printing metal, like I would assume you'd have to heat it up because you'd have to melt it and it'd be like glowing part. Like you'd have to have like a special shop for that. It wouldn't just be sitting on your desk. I don't know.
It's a small nuclear reactor inside the 3D printer.
That's right. That's right.
I also wonder, like, would it need extra sort of quality assurance on something that's just been sort of produced out of a machine or mass? Like, I'm trying to think if they, so my car's got a recall at the moment for some part that's related to airbag.
Oh yeah, the airbag recall. Everybody's got that.
It's not the first one it's had of that kind either. So I'm just, you know, do you want something? But then there's so many things that are produced on a mass scale that we don't even think about, you know, with things like cars that probably we take for granted and just go, oh, yeah, it's all going to work and it's all been tested and whatever. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to keep an eye on that and see how far away it is in terms of that becoming more and more widely used. The next one is even more, well, the next one is a lot more.
Yeah. We're jumping into the deep end on this one.
a lot more interesting to me from an ethical perspective. I think I already know where I'm going to land on it, but it's called artificial embryos. So I'll just read a little bit of what they say about it. In a breakthrough, it redefines how life can be created. Embryologists are working in the University of Cambridge. They've grown realistic looking mouse embryos using only stem cells. No eggs, no sperm, just cells plucked from another embryo.
So basically asexual reproduction.
Yeah, so they've basically grown these things into the shape of a mouse embryo that's several days old, and they say, we know that stem cells are magical in their powerful potential. I don't know about the word magical there, but anyway, they're powerful. We didn't realize they could self-organize into so beautifully or perfectly. And they've kind of admitted that they probably wouldn't have actually grown into mice, but it's an interesting... They're just interested, I guess, in the fact that they can look like they're going to do that process, even though they're not confident that that's actually the what the outcome would be at this stage. And at this stage, they've said that they're not really looking at sort of, you know, creating humans from these things or whatever. It's more from a research perspective into the early stages of life. But, I guess that's where the ethical concerns would come up.
It says artificial embryos will make it easier for researchers to study the mysterious beginnings of a human life, but you can just turn to Genesis 1 and do that.
Okay, so what are the key issues with this? I mean, my main thing is, right, we believe life begins at conception, which is obviously human egg, human sperm coming together, and so. Each individual, each person has a soul. So where does that come into play here? Like, are these just little physical things that don't have souls because they're not actually created in the same way that God creates life? We don't worry about destroying bacteria, for example, because it's soulless. It's just a physical thing, cell structure or whatever. But this is something that is meant to, if progressed in the right way, turn into a living thing that's much more complicated than a bacteria or something. So
yeah, I don't know. It's I don't have a good answer on that. I actually was wondering what is the actual moral dilemma here. I guess the fact that we're copying like life, that, you know, where does the soul fit in there and all that. I can understand that, but. I'm not smart enough to go there.
I think also it would probably be about the, you know, how long are these things kept alive, and if they get to 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks or, you know, at what point does it become you're actually just making something live so that you can kill it a short time after, or discard a certain number of them, you know, and keep other ones, and that kind of, like, how do you make those decisions, and is it, you know, what significance is placed on that form of life and all that kind of thing. I guess there's a whole bunch of things that can come out from that. But
so for the next one, we're still trying to build a city like Eureka. Have either of you watched Eureka, the show? It was like on Sci-Fi a while ago. It was like really
juicy. I've seen part of the first episode and I never watched anymore.
Okay. The premise being that this is a really smart city. It's like the highest technology possible and everything is intelligent and blah, blah, blah. Basically,
and apparently there's like a villain of the week format where one device has a problem every week and we have to go fix it.
Yeah. So this is another attempt at that. It is a new project in Toronto, Canada, called Quayside. So they're just rethinking an urban neighborhood from the ground up, rebuilding it around.
We pronounce that Quayside in Australia.
Oh, Quayside? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know how foreign.
But there's
people...
an A sound in there and a Q sound.
Yeah.
Yeah, foreigns are weird. What are your guys' thoughts on something like this, where you're basically having to take an infrastructure and rebuild it to be something completely different, and you have to essentially change the entire city to be what to come into the future?
Sounds expensive. Also, it says on the Why It Matters section, it says smart cities could make urban areas more affordable, livable, and environmentally friendly, except for the billions of dollars it'll take to build the thing to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Affordable, except for the billions of dollars. Yeah.
I
that makes sense.
I just can't get behind like some of these. I just can't see this working out terribly well, because anytime you try to severely change a city, you're also trying to severely change the culture inside the city. You're trying to make everybody come into something that is no longer their home, that they now have to make their home. And that always provides issues. And anytime you mess with infrastructure, it's difficult. And I don't know, I'd be interested to visit a potential city of the future, but I don't see it happening.
Technology shapes culture.
Woo! And yet is still somehow neutral. AI well, for everybody.
Our use of it does. Oh my goodness. This is such a recurring thing. It's becoming a nightmare. One thing on it talks about the plan, Alphabet Cyborg Labs is working on this project. The plan calls for all vehicles to be autonomous and shared. Robots will roam underground doing menial chores like delivering mail. And it basically says that to make this smart city possible, they're going to have to do a heck of a lot of monitoring of what's going on around the place to kind of keep things running and efficient. And so then the ethical concern is obviously to do with privacy, and people may not like everything they do, or you know, every sort of thing they interact with to be monitored all the time. Some people might argue that's already happening, but just so people are aware, that's kind of one of the key concerns at this stage. So yeah, it's expensive and it's an invasion of privacy in some ways. So there's a couple of potential downsides there.
Our sponsor again this week is Missionalware, your Reformed theology gift shop. Missionalware designs fun and useful things to broadcast your faith for the world to see. And this week we've got some new stuff to tell you about. They just announced that they have new women's apparel. They already had a standard ladies' tee, which was like a normal t-shirt, but it's got slightly shorter sleeves. But they have a new fashion tee now. It has a slimmer fit and a very soft feel. If you've ever worn one of these are super soft, super comfy. And of course, they come with all of the wonderful designs that Missionalware has on various other products that they have. And if that's not something you're interested in, Missionalware is the largest selection of theology apparel and lifestyle products. So just check out their website and find something that you will enjoy. And thanks to Missionalware for sponsoring Tech Reformation this week. All right. We might skip past a couple of these as we go. So if you go and read the article, which you know, I recommend just because it's fun. It's like window shopping for technology. But we might skip through a couple of these. Let's hit dueling neural networks, which is, if the picture is to be believed, some fencing neural networks, just like going at it with swords.
No, swords are not involved.
Oh, okay. Well, what is this? What is this then?
Do you guys know what a neural network is?
It's like machine learning, right?
I mean,
it's the bit that kind of is used to help machines learn things.
It's kind of like a computer model of a human brain. It's supposed to be able to make like a massive, intricate decision matrix, but like it's not like if this, do this. It's more complex than that.
All right. So their description or their explanation of this says that two networks are trained on the same data set. One known as the generator is tasked with creating variations on images it's already seen, perhaps a picture of a pedestrian with an extra arm. The second, known as the discriminator, is asked to identify whether the example it sees is like the images it has been trained on or a fake produced by the generator. Basically, is the three-armed person likely to be real? Over time, the generator can become so good at producing images that the discriminator can't spot fakes. Essentially, the generator has been taught to recognize and then create realistic-looking images of pedestrians.
Yeah, CGP Grey has a good video on this, an explainer video on YouTube that's a fun watch. And I don't usually like CGP Grey, but this video is really good.
Yeah,
so you can check that out.
Really amazing for like understanding what's going on here. You have robots training each other to be better and humans kind of overseeing the task. So yeah, helps you understand a little bit more about this.
It's a little simplistic in the sense that you know, like we do this with kind of all of the technologies we don't understand. We explain it in this analogous concept of like I've heard Bitcoin explained with apples. And it's like when you abstract that much specific away, it actually makes the explanation not as helpful because you're like, all right, but now I need to write code for this machine learning thing. And so how do I do that? And you're like, I don't know, but one of the bots is going to teach the other bot which image is correct. And it's like, yeah. But it is helpful from like a layman perspective for sure.
So the next thing really quickly is some earbuds, which they're labeling Babelfish. Some people would say Babelfish, but I would argue Babel has two B's and an L before the E. and these are basically earbuds that can translate.
Wait, so is it the Tower of Babel?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. In England?
What?
In British-speaking areas?
No. I'm not asking about what's right here, Derek. Get your facts out of here. You guys say Tower of Babel. That's what's I'm learning here.
I say Babel. I've always said Babel my whole life until met you guys.
And
you said Babel.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was written by a Brit. So we have when we're talking about the Babelfish, we have to, you know, speak it like the Brits do. So,
well, that's because Babel is a separate word. But anyway, so these are earbuds that can translate on the fly, basically. Okay, so one person wears the earbuds, the other one holds a phone. The earbud wearer speaks in his or her language, and the app translates the talking and plays it on the phone. The person holding the phone responds, and the response is translated and played through the earbuds. Yeah. I can imagine this would be pretty useful.
This is the coolest. I defy you to tell me one problem with this technology.
Because it doesn't work very well yet, Ben?
That's not like a moral issue.
No. Morally, it's awesome, and when it actually works, it's great. But Google overpromised a little bit on this one because I've definitely seen a ton of reviews that have said this does not work as well as they demoed it being. It was more of like a very practiced, very specific demo. It works some, works kind of. Once this technology gets going, it'll be great. I'm all about it. But
you clearly haven't spent enough time in the valley, Derek. Sometimes you just have to ship it and get it out there. We just got to get to market. Go.
That's right. Fail fast.
That's right. It's what is it called?
You have to disrupt. You have to disrupt your industry.
Minimum viable product? Is that the
There you go.
Okay, how do we talk about this privacy one? Cuz it didn't say anything.
Yeah. Okay. So this next one is confusing because it's talking about perfect online privacy. Does anyone know about the zero knowledge proof something?
Hold on. I'm snoogling.
Yeah. Okay. So Ben's snoogling over there. I'll try to do a little bit of an explainer of like the meta narrative about this.
Ooh, there's an ELI 5. Hold on. Go ahead. You do your splainer.
Yes. Reddit is great. So true internet privacy could finally become possible thanks to a new tool that can, for instance, let you prove you're over 18 without revealing your date of birth, or prove you have enough money in the bank for a financial transaction without revealing your balance or other details. That limits the risk of a privacy breach or identity theft, which, clearly, it's an emerging cryptographic protocol called Zero Knowledge Proof. Apparently, it's been worked on for decades, but interest has exploded in the last year, thanks to cryptocurrency obsession, etc.
Remember when I was talking about how we explain things at such an analogous level that it doesn't actually make any sense in the practical? That's what this Hacker Noon article is like. Here's an excerpt. Zero Knowledge Protocol, or Zero Knowledge Password Proof, ZKP, is a way of doing authentication where no passwords are exchanged, which means they cannot be stolen. This is cool because it makes your communication so secure and protected that nobody else can find out what you're communicating about or what files you're sharing with each other. ZKP allows you proving that you know some secret or many secrets to somebody at the other end of the communication without actually revealing it.
So this is like security questions where banks will ask you, okay, what was your last transaction, or what was your last mortgage, like that sort of stuff.
Yes, except that they somehow you prove that you know the answer without them knowing that you know the answer.
Oh, that's weird. I don't. This is clearly sorcery, and we should expunge it from the world.
Dispense with the black magic.
That's right.
Oh man,
we're so bad at being technical. Sometimes
people don't come to this podcast for technology stuff. What are you talking about, Craig?
Oh dear. All right, the next one is really interesting, as well, kind of similarly in line with the embryos one. They're calling it genetic fortune telling, and they're saying one day babies will get DNA report cards at birth, which will offer predictions about the chances of suffering heart attacks or getting cancer or getting addicted to certain substances, or maybe even their intelligence level, things like that, if it's above average and stuff like that. And so they've been doing huge studies, and they've somehow come up with this sort of DNA report card idea. But obviously this raises some questions about privacy and what are they going to use the data for and what sort of decisions are going to be made based on the information that people are given. What do you guys think about this one?
This has so many implications for parenting, because you're basically getting a list of high risks for your child before your child has those is at the point where they could be experiencing them. So like it starts turning into fear-based parenting, which I've found kids don't respond very well to, and I'm still a young father, so you know, I welcome response on this. But knowing that your kid has, you know, a higher chance for some sort of terrible disease, trying to keep them away from things for something that they cannot see or understand is, it doesn't, I know that I never responded well to that as a child. Certainly to, it was not nearly as high stakes, but, avoiding something for the chance that something bad would happen in the future. It doesn't feel good. It's not a good way of teaching your child, I guess. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I've just noticed that one of the key players is 23andMe in this one. Do you guys know what that is?
I've heard the name. Why do I know the name?
It's like they send you a package and you spit in a tube and you send it back to them and they tell you all of your like genetic stuff. Mm-hmm. And that makes me think that we're silently sealing away all of our privacy and rights and data once again. Did you guys know that CAPTCHAs, you know the thing where it's like type in the letters? That's like teaching computers how to know. It's teaching machines how to learn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like that all over again, but now with genetics.
Yeah, really interesting.
So major privacy issues from your perspective, Ben? That's the main thing?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care too much about my own personal privacy. You can have my privacy. Take it. Take all the privacy.
Ben's offering his privacy.
I got nothing to hide.
And, you know, just ask for it. He'll send it right over.
You want me to sign it away? I will do it. Let's do it. Google Clips, come on. Take all the pictures. Send them up to the cloud.
But the children. Think of the children. I see what Derek's saying, though. From a parenting perspective, I think there'd be a strong temptation for it to change the way that you interact with your kid if you know that it's good. I mean, and to be honest, some things like the, you know, if your kid's at risk of getting a certain type of cancer or something like that, it might change what you do. But at the same time, maybe it shouldn't, like unless it's like keeping them away from a substation or something that's going to give them extra radiation. Like so some of those things are just, they may eventuate down the track and you can't necessarily actually do anything now to change it anyway. And mm-hmm. So maybe that's actually not a helpful way, like you were saying, Derek, to kind of modify in a big way what you're doing because you can't, you know, you just actually don't have control over that level. Of what goes on in their body and stuff. So,
you guys are the dads on this one. I'm just here to provide the jokes.
Sure. Perfect. And you're doing a good job too.
let's do an example that's like completely bananas. Like say you're...
Well, that'll be helpful.
Can we do one that's oranges? Can we do one that's oranges? Yes or no? oranges.
Let's say that this test...
Citrus is always better, Derek, when it comes to these kinds of things.
We're not even going to do fruit. We're going to get super crazy on this because let's say that somehow this test was able to determine that your kid was more likely to get hit by a car than other people in their lifetime.
This is not a Minority Report. What are you
doing?
Just go with it for a second. Going with something that is completely silly, just to like, I don't know. I find these things help me grasp things better.
Your child is more likely to go to the grocery store on Sunday afternoons as opposed to Saturdays.
But if knowing this will only make, if the parent operates based on fear, they're going to imbue their child with such an unhealthy fear of cars that is ridiculous. Because if you have a higher chance of getting hit by a car, then absolutely you must teach them to not even touch a car. And then they don't even know how to interact with a car in a healthy way. Things like diseases can be bad, yeah, but they happen. And we need to know how to interact with them and deal with them and support people going through them instead of like having this unholy fear of like having this mystic fear of something happening to us, which this is kind of a slippery slope. This is kind of a slippery slope argument as far as that goes.
Do you know that that's a logical fallacy?
Yes, I know. And my point is not that this should not happen because this could happen, but it's something that I've seen happen that I can easily see happen in myself and potentially in other people, that this information could present the opportunity to have unhealthy fears of things. And I think that's good to realize that that is a possibility. Could be great things here as far as, you know, if you know you might have higher chance of a heart attack, you just know, okay, there's some foods that I avoid and this is a potential reality. There's healthy ways of doing this.
So Derek, if there was a technology that would allow you to guarantee from birth that your child would not have a heart attack or a high risk of heart attack by altering their genetics...
It's called CRISPR.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I was trying to trick him into, you know, going back on what he said about the CRISPR. I shouldn't have done that. That was kind of underhanded. But do you stick by what you said about CRISPR? Do you still think CRISPR's good?
I do think there's still... What did I say on CRISPR? I'm probably going to contradict myself because it's been a while. But there is something...
Oh, man. I can't imagine what that's like. I've never had the problem of contradicting myself ever. It must be such a hard existence, Derek.
We do want to keep in mind that these technologies are not infallible and that potential problems could increase... potential problems could crop up from solving other problems.
And since they're neutral, they can be used in completely evil ways and good ways.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I'm still for like being able to solve some of those medical issues before they happen, but with the realization that other medical issues could potentially arise from trying to solve other medical issues. It's a whole big, you know, melting mushy pot of maybes. So,
yeah. Yeah. On that. Which was exactly why I didn't want to jump into the melting pot. All right. The final one on the, is it 10?
Oh, I thought that was 10, the last one. 10 things?
I thought that was the last one too.
No. Materials quantum leap.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hit this one fast.
The prospect of powerful new quantum computers comes with a puzzle. They'll be capable of feats of computation inconceivable with today's machines, but we haven't yet figured out what we might do with those powers. One likely and enticing possibility is precisely designing molecules. So they're talking about...
That's cool.
Creating new proteins for better drug, more effective drugs, not better drugs, not just like more fun drugs, which drugs aren't fun, they're bad, but you know.
Except for the fun ones.
Special electrolytes for better batteries, compounds that could turn sunlight directly into liquid fuel. Those are some of the things that they have given as example or possible examples. So that seems pretty useful, pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I've never
seen... Quantum computing... Gives me a headache.
Yeah, I've... Quantum computing is magic. Like, we talked about magic not being real. No, this is definitely just
No,
magic.
It's not. It's just talked about like it's magic because we don't actually understand it.
Oh, are we talking... Like, so we should take some examples that are really dumbed down in order to explain this, right?
That'll help. That's gonna help clear this whole thing up.
Perfect.
Yeah, quantum computing is based on quantum physics, and the idea is, like in actual computing, where there's no magic involved, you have everything reduces down to a bit, which is a tiny piece of information, and a bit is either 0 or 1. Well, in quantum computing, you have qubits or quantum bits. Qubits can be both 1 and 0 at the same time until you measure it to see which one it is. And then by measuring it, you change its position. And so you change its value. So you can never know what it is until you measure it. And as soon as you measure it, you change what it is. Doesn't that just sound like the most insane thing
that's
in
ridiculous.
The world?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's because it is. That's because the way we talk about it is just psychotic. It's crazy. We've got to come up with better ways to talk about this.
So say you've got a bunch of lemons, right? If we start with lemons this time, I'm just kidding.
Then you observe the lemons, and then they turn to oranges. It's crazy.
The way I've talked about it is that a qubit is like a super bit, and it can just store more information.
Okay.
So it stores what's called superposition, which is the way that it's rotating, and you're just able to do a lot more with it because it has the much greater capacity than like an ordinary bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how accurate that is. I just know it makes a lot more sense to talk about it in that way than the way that I just described, which is how everyone talks about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why quantum computing drives me crazy.
Yeah.
This has been Tech Minute with Ben. Anyway, back to the show.
That's our overview of the 10 Breakthrough Technologies 2018 MIT Technology Review. That's a lot of interesting stuff in here, things to look out for, things that will probably be coming like 10 years down the pike, I would guess.
Look out! Something's coming down the pipe!
I want to laugh louder, but I've got a toddler asleep in the next room. It hurts not to laugh properly.
I'm crying. I don't know.
Hang on. I'm coming. Hold on. I'm recovering.
If you would like to discuss these interesting technologies, you can hit us up on Slack. You can join us at slack.techreformation.com.
You can also find more topics discussed in our backlog at techreformation.com. Or you can reach out to us on Twitter at techreformation.
And if you have some spare time, or even if you don't, we'd love it if you would leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you can leave reviews for podcasts. We'd really appreciate it and help us get the word out there about Tech Reformation.
This has been Tech Reformation. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. And I ain't looking back. Choice, and I ain't looking back. Me too.
I didn't get enough sleep last night.
This has deteriorated. I'm meant to be asleep. It's after midnight. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning here.
Oh, the train is off the tracks, guys.
And I think that's where we'll wrap up.
Yeah.
This has been something. I hope we're here next week. I can't drink my coffee because I'm laughing too hard.
Ow! My back hurts. From laughing too hard. I've never had that happen.
Oh dear. I can see my screen through the blur of my tears.